Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Hubler and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
New York and New Jersey love Coach K.
Go Hoosiers!
Coach K speaks the truth!
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, and I'm joined by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schultheis, every week. Coach, I had to play that because we have a record number of questions sent in for the Coach K mailbag, and we're going to get to see firsthand, does Coach K speak the truth?
You know, well, I've said it before, and I will say it again, Joe, on this show. We speak the truth. It may be our truth, but we speak the truth. Joe, on this soggy, I mean, the rain the last couple days, folks, if you don't live in the Midwest, you may not understand the amount of rain we went through, have gone through. It was amazing. And, Joe, I don't know about you, but my backyard had like a small little pond in it for about half a day. It was everywhere. It was rain, but I guess it's better than snow, huh?
Yeah, it's been crazy. I don't know if I've ever heard the amount of thunder and lightning as we've had in the last 24 hours in a 24-hour period. I mean, the other night, Thursday night, my son Reed and my wife Liz have a tendency of forgetting to roll their windows up, so at 4 in the morning, I hear what's going on, and I run out there to look and make sure the windows are definitely shut, and I should have had faith in both of them. They did, but right as I went around Reed's car, a flash of lightning hits, just was so bright and so intense that for a second I thought, oh, my God, did I get hit? It was just, it's been crazy. The lightning, the thunder, the storms, the rain, it's just amazing.
And you know, if you would have been hit by that thunderbolt from heaven, it would be the Coach K and No Joe Show, and we'd probably have to bring Don Schultheis on, and we'd have the Coach K and No Joe Show with the bro. So either way, we'd have been covered. But Joe, I'll tell you what, I'm glad you're with me. You are my sidekick. You are my partner in crime, so to speak, or in sports talk, internet radio. You know, a couple of big things going up. Obviously, everybody knows the Final Four is this weekend in Dallas, or North Texas, as some of them say. The NIT was last night. We'll talk a little bit about the NIT a little bit later. But also, the girls' Final Four is going on, Joe. Can you – I'm going to put you on the spot, Joe. I'm going to put you on the spot. Can you name – you don't even have to name all four teams in the girls' Final Four. But can you name three, just name three, of the girls' teams in the NCAA Women's Final Four?
Let me think about it here.
Quit looking at the newspaper, Joe.
UConn's a given.
Yeah,
they're always in it. And UConn and Notre Dame.
Notre Dame,
Stanford,
yes.
And Maryland.
Stanford and Maryland is correct. Maryland beat last year, I think it was last year's champion, Louisville, to take them out. Now, Joe, can you tell me one other important fact about the women's Final Four? What is unique about this year's Women's Final Four? I'll tell you that it has to do with two of the teams.
I can't say what I have to say, but I'll just say that I have no idea.
Okay, two of the teams in the Women's Final Four are undefeated. Undefeated,
Jones. Oh.
And can you tell me what two teams they are, which two teams they are?
I'm going to say UConn.
Well, and that's almost a given.
Yeah, that's always a given when it comes to women's basketball. And Stanford.
No, you were close. You got half of it right. UConn and the women's team coming out of the state of Indiana, the only team in the state of Indiana that we really, basketball-wise, that we really had a lot to be excited about. Notre Dame is undefeated. So there are two teams in the women's Final Four that are undefeated. UConn is 37-0, and Notre Dame 36-0, and UConn maybe 38-0, I'm not sure. But the point is that we've got two undefeated teams. Joe, that doesn't happen very often. I don't know if it's ever happened. It may have happened in the women's finals. But here's my question to you, Joe, because I've been throwing the questions out at you before. We talk a little bit about who's on the show and what we've got coming up. Do you think that this speaks to a lack of parity in women's basketball on the college level, because we see the same team over and over and over getting to the women's Final Four? It's UConn. It used to be Tennessee for decades. UConn, Notre Dame, Stanford, or Baylor. It just seems like the same six or seven teams are going to be somewhere in that Final Four. Louisville. Does this speak to the strength of college basketball for the women, or does this actually speak to a lack of parity and weakness to the game for women's college basketball? What are your thoughts?
I think it kind of goes back to the fact that, you know, the way men's basketball used to be before everything went crazy, you know, the Haves, the Kentuckys, which still kind of is, the IUs, UCLA's, they had great talent always wanting to go there, and I think the key is 4 years, you know, and they were able to build around that, and so the good teams are getting the good players, developing them, and that's what the result is. Now, I've got a question for you, though, real quick, sent in. What do you think about Pat Summitt's son being named head coach at Louisiana Tech at the age of 23, since you kind of mentioned Tennessee there? I'll go ahead and throw that out to you.
Well, I'm sure that I did see that, and I thought it was interesting. I'm sure there are a lot of people that wish they would have had that opportunity, but obviously Pat Summitt, her reputation has helped get him in the door. He must have at least a solid background, though, because they're not just going to hire to hire. You know, speaking as a young man who came out of college and took a head coaching job right out of college on the high school level in the state of Indiana at 22, you know, I understand that. It's a wonderful opportunity, and I'm sure he'll be surrounded by good people. The whole key for his success, Joe, you know this and I know this. He's got to be able to recruit. And if he can recruit, well, then they're going to say what a great success he was. But this isn't Tennessee. It's not the beginnings of women's basketball. He's not walking in as Pat Summitt. He's walking in as someone connected, but you got to recruit. It's, you know, college basketball, and I was talking with Toby Madison. He used to be the head coach at Wabash Valley College. He also was an assistant on the Division I level, and he played for South Alabama when they went to the NCAA tournament out of Washington, Indiana. And Toby talked about, you know, the coaches are important, but you got to have players. And I agree with that. I think on the college level, you got to have good players. You just got to have good players. And I do think coaches help get good players in a position to be successful. And I think that's what Calipari has done with Kentucky. But we'll see what happens, Joe, to make a small, short question with a long answer. The bottom line is, can he recruit? If he can recruit, then they made a good hire. If he can't recruit, then 3 years from now, they'll be searching for a coach. And let me say this again. If he can recruit, 3 years from now, they'll be looking for a new coach. Why? He'll be stepping up in the world of women's college basketball. Joe, I did not see the full schedule of the show, so go through and let our listeners know who we've got coming up in the first or second hour, and we'll talk about some other things before we take our first break.
Okay, yeah. I had to email real early to send to you, and I realized about 15 minutes before the show, I never hit send. You got to hit send, people, for the email to actually make it to the, to where it needs to go. We've got Big Ten Network senior writer Tom Dienhardt, a very good friend of the show, coming on. We'll be talking, some of the things we talked about yesterday were the Northwestern unionization of the basketball, of the football team, all the possible early entries into the draft from the Big Ten, the state of IU and Purdue basketball right now. So we'll be touching on those subjects. And then we'll also be having our MLB correspondent, Jeff Cochran. Goof, as some of us know him. He's going to be on to talk about Major League Baseball, but more importantly, and I wish I knew the 100% answer to this, and he has been to 20-some, I think, straight Final Fours, and he's in North Texas / Dallas, as we say it. Now, Coach, is the North Texas type thing, is that like a politically correct thing, or why is it not just Dallas? It is in Dallas, right? Or is this place not in Dallas?
Well, it is in Dallas, but you've got that whole area there with Dallas and what, Arlington, all that stuff, and I think there's just a portion that might be on the suburbs, and somebody who's listening who has more of the geography of that area can tell us. But I have noticed, Joe, that they keep calling it in North Texas, the Final Four in North Texas. To me, it's in Dallas, and that's what I say. It's in Dallas. So is it something with where the stadium is located, or they're trying to publicize the northern part of Texas? I don't know. But for those fans out there who are like me, where's the Final Four at? In Dallas. Where am I at? I'm not in Dallas because – Joe, the executive producer of the show, promised me that I would get to go to the Final Four one of these years. I still am not at the Final Four, so it tells me that economically it's not possible for Coach K to get to the Final Four.
We blew that budget last week with your passes to the Barre State Final game. So,
yeah, and we'll talk about that later in the show as well. That was a good time. The Coach K and Joe show was well represented at the Indiana Boys State Basketball Finals. Milligan Communications got me press passes, and I was literally, and if you saw the game, you might have seen me. And if you tape the game, you can look for me. I was literally on the floor, south end basket, on the playing floor. I had my son in tow with me, Scott, who's a seventh grader, watching my oldest son, Josh, who was an assistant with Barre. My wife, Janet, was willing to sit in the stands by herself, which was okay because she had like sixth row seats. So all went well up there other than Barre played a phenomenal game, had an opportunity to win it in regulation, fumbled the ball out of bounds, went into overtime, and they got beat. But it was a great state final. So, I can't get to the Final Four, Joe, but as you said, we've got Jeff Cochran. He is our Cincinnati Reds contributor for Major League Baseball and also, as you said, a veteran. I don't know what he's going to tell us. This may be like 27 or 28 straight Final Fours, and I'm looking forward to hearing from Jeff because he gets so excited on these events, and I'm sure he's just having a ball down there. I also placed on Twitter, Joe, a picture of, I just mentioned Toby Madison, a picture of Toby Madison's son, Cameron, with UCLA coach Steve Alford, New Mexico's coach Craig Neal, down at the Final Four with a little father and son, first annual father and son trip with his son, Cameron. And they took photos with some of the different coaches that Toby knew as a player and as coach on the college level as well. So many things going on. Last night, Joe, I don't know if you caught it. I did. tremendous game in the NIT. I know that a lot of people don't really talk about the NIT unless their school's in it, but I have a great feeling for the NIT. I love the history of it. Before the NCAA was what the NCAA is, the NIT was. If you were in the NIT, you were really in the national championship, and I think.
No, wait. You're going to be one of the few IU fans I know that will admit that, because a couple of
those banners were
not for the when the NIT was the big dog.
Listen. You didn't let me finish because you want to jump in and somehow bring Purdue into this conversation and their mythical championships. But what I was going to say was the NCAA tournament, once it began, because it was the national collegiate tournament, it took the place of the NIT. The NIT was not a non-for-profit tournament. It was more of a for-profit tournament. Now the NIT is run by the NCAA. And there was a time, for those of you who may not know, there was a time when you could actually play in the NIT and the NCAA tournament in the same year. If you got ousted from one quick enough, you could go into the other. But the NIT, Joe, game was last night. Larry Brown, great pro coach, great college coach. He's won ABA, NBA, NCAA. He had a chance to win an NIT championship last night. Got beat by Richie Pitino and Minnesota. Minnesota, end of the year on just a great run. They won the NIT tournament. They wanted to get that NCAA, but couldn't do that. It was an interesting game, Joe, because Rick Pitino was about two rows behind the Minnesota bench, and all throughout the game, Rick was yelling things to Richie during the game, especially late when it got really close, and they went ahead and fouled at the end of the game, which they needed to keep SMU from getting a clear three. But it was a great game. You had great basketball knowledge in the Garden. You had Larry Brown, you had Rick Pitino, and you had the up-and-coming coach, 31-year-old Richie Pitino. And it was a great ending for Minnesota. It's a great story for SMU. If you're not familiar, Larry Brown was out of coaching for a couple years, and had a problem getting back in. And he was finally, able to get the SMU job, and he has resurrected the Mustang program from literally nothing, Joe. But for those of you who are Minnesota fans, don't get too excited. Winning the NIT does not correlate into success in next year's NCAA tournament. Minnesota's won it before and not done anything the next year in the NCAA. We saw what Iowa did in the NIT last year, I believe got to either the championship game or the Final Four, and miserably failed down the stretch this year in the Big Ten and really couldn't find their way into the NCAA tournament, not really. But just a lot of good stuff college-wise, basketball. We've got the girls' Final Four. We've got the boys' Final Four. And then we've got the NIT. But there's other things going on. There's other things going on. And Joe's going to get our first guest, Tom Dienert. Looking forward to talking to Tom. Of course, Tom is a senior writer for the BigTenNetwork.com, so looking forward to that. The Spurs had a chance to win 20 in a row while the 76ers had lost like 25 or 26 in a row. 76ers broke their streak of losses, and the Spurs, by courtesy of Durant and Oklahoma City, could not get 20 in a row. That's pretty phenomenal, folks. First of all, it's phenomenal that you can lose 20-something games in a row in the pros, but it's also phenomenal to win 20, to be in a position to win 20 in a row in the NBA. So that was really interesting. I just think San Antonio has one of the great approaches to basketball in the NBA, and they had a chance to win 20 in a row, But that didn't happen. That didn't happen. Oklahoma City stopped them before they could do that. Our Indiana Pacers, folks, they're making me nervous. Our Pacers are making me nervous. Coach Vogel and the gang, and I bragged on them all year. It just seems like when we brought Turner in and released Granger, which I still think should bode well for us going forward, chemistry was gone. We've always had problems scoring this year, but then we started to fold in other areas. Now, they had a come-to-Jesus meeting, as you so to speak, in the dressing room after one of the games, and they say they aired a lot of things out. People came forward and did a little talking. Did it help? Well, the Pacers went out and won, and we were happy for that. But we're in a struggle, guys. If you're a Pacer fan, I'm sure you're saying what a lot of people are saying, we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. And then under your breath, you're thinking, man, we got to get this thing together. But we have righted the ship a little bit. Fortunately, at the same time, the Heat were struggling. So that kind of helped things out. But let's hope that Frank Vogel and the gang can get this thing ironed out and we get back on track. Play as many games as they play in the NBA. You're going to have those ups and downs. You're going to have cycles where emotionally and physically you go through periods where you struggle a little bit. Hopefully this has been the Pacers' time, and they're going to right the ship. Now, I love all the guys. If you're pro Pacers, I love the pundits who are out there saying, well, this could be a good thing for the Pacers because it changes their seed, and they may have an easier road into the Eastern Conference Finals this way. Well, I can tell you from a coach's point of view, you don't like when your team's not playing well. So, however you want to look at that, you want to find the sun in the clouds, that's a good way to look at it if you're a Pacer fan. But in the end, if you're a coach, you want your team, general manager, if you're Larry Bird, you want that team playing well. And one of the areas that has struggled so much has been offensively. And when the defense breaks down and the ball movement breaks down, well, that exposes that lack of offense even more. Well, tells me that we've got Tom Dienert from the Big Ten Network. We're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to applaud Minnesota. We're going to talk about Wisconsin. We're going to say, what the heck's up with these Northwestern unionizers? We're going to talk the troubles of IU and Purdue. We're going to do it all with Tom Dienert of the Big Ten Network. But first, we're going to go to break. Call your buddies. Text them. Get them on the line to listen to Coach K and Joe Show. CoachKandJoeShow.com. Get them there. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Toyota in Jasper. You know what happens when you sell a bunch of new Toyotas? You trade for hundreds of great pre-owned cars, trucks, vans, and sport utilities. Many are certified, have factory warranty remaining, fully inspected, and they're all priced to sell. Hurry in for the best selection. Ubelar & Sons Toyota, where customers send their friends for a great pre-owned vehicle since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hi, this is Tyler Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And you are listening to the Coach K and Joe Show. This is the coach, Coach K, Ken Schulteis. And before we get to our first guest, and I do want to mention that the luck of the Coach K and Joe Show for our guests continues. What I'm talking about is Jaquan Lyle was on, and Jaquan, of course, has committed to Oregon, one of the top players in the country coming out of high school. He plays for Huntington Prep, and they were playing a big tournament this week, and he hit the big three, a buzzer-beating three-pointer Thursday night to lift fifth-ranked Huntington Prep to a 65-63 victory over number 6 Lala Muir. So, Jaquan, the luck of the Coach K and Joe Show is following you. So, remember, that's why people need to be on the show. And speaking of being on the show, who better to have on Final Four weekend after the NIT victory by a Big Ten team, Tom Dienert of the Big Ten Network. Thomas, great to have you on the show.
Yeah, give me some luck, all right? I can only do some luck. We all could, right?
Hey, you know, where things were murky for the Big Ten through the middle part of this year and as we got towards the NCAA tournament, at least we have a couple of bright spots. It's not in West Lafayette, and it's certainly not in Bloomington, but the Big Ten's got to feel pretty good, and we'll start with the NIT and Richie Pitino, first-year coach, youngest, maybe the youngest coach in Division I, I'm not sure, he's 31. They go in and they get a big win over one of the great coaches all time in basketball from SMU and Larry Brown. That's a good thing for the Big Ten as we go into these finals. We've got an NIT champion.
Yeah, I mean, it never hurts. And I think the Big Ten's acquitted itself pretty well here. You know, three Elite Eight teams, the run by Minnesota and the NIT. You know, I think the conference has shown it is the best in the country. I mean, yeah, the SEC has two Final Four teams, but still, the overall body work, it's hard to quibble with what the Big Ten's done here. And, yeah, you're right. You know, Larry Brown was trying to become, I think, the first coach ever to win an NBA title, an NCAA title, and an NIT title. I don't know if you saw this, Coach K and Joe. I retweeted something this morning. Quick trivia question for you guys. When was the last time the Big Ten had an NIT and an NCAA champ in the same year?
Wow. Wow. Was Indiana the NIT champion that year?
Yes.
Oh. I can't think of
remember the year?
I can't remember.
The Big Ten NCAA champ was sort of an iconic team, led by an iconic player, I should say more so. One of the greatest games in NCAA history, as far as championship games, a revolutionary title game, featuring a team from your state as well.
Joe, are you finding this on the internet for us?
All it is, it was 1979. It was 1979. Michigan State beat Indiana State.
Great trivia question. I should have known that. That was Judd Heathcote's magic bird, I guess, that, 79.
Yeah.
That really was a revolutionary year, NCAA. Two guys that would go on to kind of change the face of pro basketball. You kind of stumped me. I did know that Indiana was somewhere in the mix. What did Purdue do that year?
I think Indiana beat Purdue for the title game.
You're right.
That was Joe Barry Curl's junior season, and the next year Purdue got to the Final Four in 1980.
You're right.
Isaiah got there then. No, yeah, that was Isaiah's freshman year then, 79. No, 76, was that? No, I can't remember. I know 80, 81 was his last year, Isaiah's last year. I can't remember if he's a sophomore or junior that year. I think he was just a sophomore.
Well, I know he went early, so I do know that.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have a listener that straightens us out for sure. Tom, you just said it. I mean, a couple minutes ago you brought up the fact that the Big Ten has really kind of saved face. And I don't want to mean save face. I mean, they lifted themselves up as a top conference, and everybody thought they were. I've got to be honest with you. I got a little down on the Big Ten midway through the year. I didn't feel good about Wisconsin. I love Wisconsin. I love Bo Ryan. I thought this team was a team that could get to the Final Four, but they hit a stretch where I just didn't know if they could get there. I mean, I know they had some injuries. They were slowed by some things. I just didn't think. I thought they would get in the NCAA tournament, and their offense would go dry on them again, and that didn't happen. Michigan Mm-mm. played better than I ever thought they would play moving into a chance for the Final Four. Really, as you said, when you look at this year, it wasn't Purdue, it wasn't Indiana, understanding. Ohio State got in, and you know, they lost to a Dayton team, and everybody kind of laughed, and then Dayton goes on and gets within a game of the Final Four. I mean, we have to look at the Big Ten season, as you said, and this has been solid season for the Big Ten when you look at it and compare it with the other conferences in the country.
Yeah, I mean, exactly right. A very good summation there. As you guys know, when you get in the midst of conference play, things can start looking ugly. Every team knows every other team so well, tendencies, you know, plays, run, all this and that, and it's hard. And once you get outside your league, sometimes you can get a little better indication of maybe how good your conference is. And I think we've seen that with the Big Ten. And, yeah, Coach K, there was a point there where Wisconsin, they started, I think, 16-0, got to number three in the country. Then they won one of six games and went 1-5 at one stretch there this winter. And a lot of struggles. They lost three home games in a row for the first time since, I think, 1997, and they, of course, righted the ship. But you realize at that point, when after that 1-5 stretch, I think Wisconsin was 4-5 in Big Ten play. And, of course, they won eight games in a row. They lost their finale to Nebraska, but that momentum's carried on into the big dance. But you guys are probably like me. Of the Big Ten's big three this year, I think Wisconsin was the team we probably least expected to get to the Final Four. I think Michigan State and Michigan, we thought, had great shots. But, again, have to take your hat off to Bo Ryan. I mean, I'm happy for the guy. I mean, the ultimate deuce payer, guy who's really worked his way up the backwaters of the sport. And it's just great to see all that hard work, that perseverance pay off for Bo Ryan in this program.
You know, another thing, Tom, that excites me about Wisconsin getting there, and I want to I was remiss because I did not mention Michigan State. I thought after all the injuries they went through with key players, they tried to right that ship and find momentum. I was a little surprised with the way they did play in their loss. But with Bo Ryan, I think what excites me as a basketball coach is that people around the country have been able to watch them move through the tournament and realize what tremendous basketball you can play when you're well coached, when you do things fundamentally, when you use the ball and the floor the way you're supposed to. You don't have to just have the very best athlete can and chuck it and just press all over the place. Nothing wrong with that basketball from the standpoint if you got those players. But Bo Ryan, and I think this is why most coaches that I've at least heard being interviewed and guys I've talked to that I know, they're happy for Bo Ryan. And there are a lot of times coaches aren't happy for their coaches. They're happy for Bo Ryan because, as you said, he is the ultimate dues payer. He has coached at all the levels. He worked his way up, waiting for that chance. And it isn't like this is out of the blue. He's had some outstanding Wisconsin teams. But, again, it's great for people to be able to see a well-coached team, and not just fundamentally, but how to work the floor, how to use the floor and the back cuts and the things like that. And I got to tell you, I'm excited for Bo Ryan because I'm excited that other people get to see the true essence of what basketball is all about when you watch Wisconsin play.
Yeah, boy, passing the basketball, it's a thing of beauty, isn't it? The way they work it around and the way they shoot it, the unselfishness, the patience, And they're still a very good defense as well. And they don't foul a lot. It's all there for you. And, you know, it's funny. A lot of times the storyline for years and years in Madison is always sort of that little train that could, you know, getting by with 2- and 3-star recruits. But take a deeper look at that Wisconsin roster, and there's more more talent there than I think people like to let on to. Sam Decker was a 4- or 5-star recruit. You know, the kid out of Toledo, Ohio, Nigel Hayes, was a 4-star kid. The freshman guard, Bronson Koenig, was a 4- or 5-star kid who could have gone to Duke. Trayvon Jackson out of Westerville, Ohio. And even Bent Brust was, I think, a 4-star kid. So he's getting better players there. You know, Frank Kaminsky was a 3-star, but I think ESPN had him as a 4-star. So he's getting better players there. And, again, I'm not saying the coaching isn't a big part of it, but it certainly helps that he's been able to continually upgrade the talent level on that roster too.
Oh, I agree with you. I in no way am going to say that Bo Ryan without good players – really good players is just going to win, because that's not going to happen. You got to have good players, but I think he's done a good job of recruiting to his style, and yet bringing in guys that are a little athletic. They're not the overly athletic players, but they can move and they can cut and they can defend. And you brought up a couple of them. I know people were high on Kaminsky all year. I was as well, Tom. I think he's an outstanding player. One player, and I want to ask your opinion on this because you follow this Big Ten just in and out. Sam Decker, you know, he's had some issues physically. I don't think we have seen his best basketball this year. Could it come in this Final Four?
Yeah, it could. I think he's probably going to have to play his best basketball. The Badgers want to do what some people think is the impossible. To win that championship, easily, I think, the most athletic guy on that roster, a guy who can basically score in about every variety of way, facing the basket. He's a nice shooter, three-point range, obviously. Put the ball on the floor, get to the basket. He's good in transition. You know, he's not real physical or strong, but, again, almost like a gazelle out there. And the guy who probably physical is the most talented player overall for that team. And again, I'll defer to you, Coach K, on this. I'd like to get your 3 or 4 keys. If you're the color analyst for this Wisconsin-Kentucky game, what are your 3 or 4 keys for the Badgers? They want to beat Calipari's Wildcats. What do the Badgers have to do?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and I know the first thing that comes to mind immediately. I think Wisconsin can do this if they can keep Kaminsky on the floor, and that is they've got to block out. They've got to control the boards. Tom, Kentucky has just been phenomenal in the tournament, but they've been phenomenal because some teams haven't maybe done some of the things they need to fundamentally, and that's one of them is keeping them off the boards. You know, Kentucky's very athletic, very strong, very long. So I think that Wisconsin has to block out. They have to keep Kentucky off the boards offensively, and they have to keep them off defensively. You know, defensively, you said, what do you mean, Coach? Well, they've got to be able to get some offensive rebounds, and they've got to be able to slow down the transition of Kentucky by competing for those rebounds when it's off their offense. You can't just let Kentucky take it off the board and get it out. So they've got to play it on both sides. The other area is, and I know this is just common sense for anyone, but folks, sometimes it's easier said than done. Wisconsin has to shoot the ball well on the perimeter, and this is why. You've got to spread that Kentucky defense out a little bit. If you can make those young defenders for Kentucky, and they are young no matter what you say, they're good, and they've learned a lot. Coach Cal doesn't use that excuse, and I love that about him. But they are young, and it could cause them to make some mistakes mentally if they're shooting the ball well, Wisconsin shooting the ball well, and keeping Kentucky spread out to where it opens up some driving lanes, it opens up some opportunities to get that ball in Kaminsky to kick it, come back the other way. So those are two things that I see. And then the third thing is, and I think Wisconsin does this pretty well, they've got to defend. Now, here's the critical thing. I don't know that anyone in the Big Ten next to Michigan State, Michigan State wasn't healthy a lot this year, it can compare to the athletic ability, strength, and no one could compare to the length of this Kentucky team. You're talking about guards that are the size of most small forwards or forwards. These guys are athletic. They're long. They're quick. So three things. First thing is they got to handle the boards. They got to do their job on the boards. Second thing is they've got to hit their shots to spread that defense out because Wisconsin is awfully tough when they're shooting well on the perimeter. It opens up Bo Ryan's passing game tremendously. And the third thing is they have to defend. And I'm just going to – what are your thoughts?
Now, again, if you're the Badgers, what pace do you want to play this game at? Do you want to – I mean, they show they can get up and down the court with Oregon, but do you want to – just do you want to make this a track meet with Kentucky?
No.
Do you want to try to pull up and not go in transition? Or well, pace-wise, if you're the Badgers, what pace do you want to try to play this game at if you can dictate it?
You're going to limit the possessions. Of course, you're not going to hold the ball because – That's not necessarily in that Wisconsin's best interest. They've got to take their shots when they're there. They've got to move the basketball. And I think when Wisconsin moves – Tom, would you agree that when Wisconsin moves the basketball, automatically they begin to control the tempo of the game and the way they're capable of defending? And that's why I said they've got to compete on the boards on both ends of the court, because if you let Kentucky just go to the defensive board and get it out quickly – there's the change in the transition or the pace of the game. So you've got to compete on both ends of the floor on the boards in order to slow that transition game. Because if Randall can just grab a rebound and kick it out, well, the transition's gone.
Yeah. And then we talked about Decker as maybe the key guy. Is there an X-factor guy for the Badgers, you think? A guy like a Blust or a Trayvon Jackson or Nigel Hayes? You think that maybe isn't getting talked about like Kaminsky, that could end up maybe really being an X factor, needs to be an X factor if the Badgers want to win?
Well, I'm going to throw that back at you because you know this team better than I do. I do think that a couple of the guys you just mentioned have the athletic ability that helps them to match up with a very athletic Kentucky team. But what are your thoughts on that? You know, we hear Decker, we hear Kaminsky, but Jackson and those guys have been critical in games. Maybe statistically not always showing up the way they do. What are your thoughts on that, Tom?
Well, Nigel Hayes is a guy that I've grown to really like a lot during the course of this year. 6'7", 250 pounds. He's a true freshman. He's obviously a work in progress, but I tell you what, he can play some defense. He's physical. Not a great shooter, but he can work around the basket, and he can rebound, too. I mean, that's a guy I think he's not going to score 20 points, but he's a guy that could get, if he can give you 10, 12 points, get 7 or 8 rebounds, play some defense, be physical. I think it's key for Nigel Hayes to continue to play. He's voted sixth man of the year in the Big Ten as a freshman. He's a guy I think has got to be a real X factor for Bo Ryan's crew.
Let me ask you a question on this. Two things I want to touch on. One, the coaches, and get your thoughts on the coaches matchup here. But before we do that, let's talk about the two benches. When you look at Kentucky, they've got I'm assuming they still got the big guy out. When you look at Wisconsin, do the benches come into play here, or do they favor either team, in your opinion, Tom?
I don't know if either team really favored bench-wise. And he's talked about Hayes, of course, coming off the bench. We saw what the Marcus Lee kid come in the last game after Carly's guy wasn't able to play and played out of his mind. So I'm not sure if one bench has a decided advantage over the others. Again, Hayes, Bronson Koenig plays a little bit of point guard. Kid from Deerfield, Illinois, plays a little bit at the power forward spot. So it may be a wash, honestly. I'm not sure if that's going to be a a huge factor. But, you know, as you were talking, Coach K, about defense, I got to thinking, imagine, you know, you talked about Kentucky being young. We know what comes with youth, sometimes impatience, not a lot of intensity. So obviously if you're Wisconsin, you probably want to try to make Kentucky play defense for as long as they can, because you got to figure it's going to break down at some point with that extra pass, and that could lead to a good look for the Badgers. So they don't want to take quick shots, obviously. Wisconsin typically never takes quick shots. You got to make Kentucky try to play defense for 15 or 20 seconds. Hopefully in that span, you know, something's going to break down and somebody gets a good, easy look.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there, Tom. And you know, it doesn't matter what grade you're in, what level you're in. No one likes to play defense on extended periods, especially a team that likes to get out and go with the ball. Now, they're just, I would say if they're a little bit more mature, that may not be a major problem. But let's look at the coaches. I think it's an interesting matchup. Coach Cal is known for trying to get in the head of the guy on the other side, and he's always talking all kinds of stuff and has done a great job. Three Final Fours in the last 4 years. Everybody kind of wrote off the Coach Cal approach last year. But I said last year, it wasn't the talent level. It was the fact that they had nobody to lead the team out on the floor. This year, the Harrisons have come along. Their talent level's up a notch, but the Harrisons have come in and matured, and they become good leaders on the floor, and that's what he's got to have. But Coach Cal likes to get in people's heads. You've got Bo Ryan. He knows how to coach. He knows what he expects out of his team. He knows how to prepare for the other team. When you look at the two coaches, does anyone stand out or any approach stand out to you, or is this just a great matchup of styles?
It's a great matchup. I think you still have to give some edge to Calipari. Just haven't been there and done that. Nothing's going to phase this guy. I mean, Bo Ryan's not—he's not going to be phased. He's in his 60s and he's seen a heck of a lot in his career. He's certainly not going to be blinded by the light. But again, I think Calipari and this team he's got. I know Florida's won what 30 games in a row, but golly, this Kentucky team is rolling. It's motivated and. Probably it's easily the most talented team that's assembled there in Arlington, Texas. And Calipari's pushed the buttons on these type of teams. Just 2 years ago, you talked about the national championship with Anthony Davis. And I guess you still have to give him a slight edge in this environment. But, it's hard to bet against Bo Ryan. But, you know, he's been to Final Fours at lower levels, but never at this level under this scrutiny, this type of an audience. So, again, I have to give a slight nod to Calipari in this.
Okay, so we've talked about what Wisconsin we think they need to do. We've talked about Kentucky. We've talked about these coaches. The bench seems to be a wash. Who are you picking? Who are you picking, Tom?
I can't pick against Kentucky. I tell you what, I mean, how can you pick against Kentucky? I mean, I don't know. I know I'm familiar with the Badgers, what they've done. But I tell you what, back in Halloween, early November, the polls came out. Who was the number one team in the country? Kentucky Wildcats. And now that was for a reason. We saw the growing pains. We saw the issues they had to deal with, developing chemistry, leadership. And there was a while there where it looked like this season was going to go in the dumper just like last year's, but it didn't. And they're playing very well. We've broken down the talent as well. So, again, you got to go with the Wildcats here, I think.
Okay, before we move over quickly to this other game and then finish up with some other Big Ten talk, just want to bring up one thing. Does this play into it at all? Kentucky, when you look at how they got to this Final Four, one shot either way, Tom, and they're gone. They're out of this tournament. They don't even get here. Wisconsin was very fortunate in this last game. Is the testedness of the games leading up to this play into this at all, or does this just further accentuate why you feel like Kentucky, because they have the talent, they can hang in there, and things can end up going their way because of that. And again, that bodes well for Kentucky.
Yeah, I think it just plays into the I'm not going to call it invincibility factor, but just the confidence this Kentucky team has to have. You talked about some of the harrowing wins, some of the close calls and the nail biters that they've stared down adversity, they've stared down defeat and emerged victorious. So that's only going to have to fuel, again, the confidence of these players who are already awfully talented. So you combine mega talent with confidence for a team that's on a roll. It's an awfully volatile combination. It's going to be awfully difficult to beat.
Yeah, Kentucky, 8 titles, Wisconsin, 0. The other game is UConn. It'll be actually the first game in Dallas. UConn, 30-8. They're definitely a surprise to me to be here. Shabazz Napier has just literally taken this team, as Kimba did a couple years ago, onto mm-hmm. his shoulders and gotten this team here. And I'm not going to lie, UConn goes as Shabazz Napier goes. Florida, as you mentioned earlier, Tom, 30 straight wins, 2 national championships under this coach, Billy Donovan. How do you see this game?
Yeah, I mean, the bubble for UConn has to burst, doesn't it? As a number 7 seed, it's been a heck of a run for Kevin Holley just in his second year. For a program that wasn't even in the Big Dance last year because of NCAA issues, some academic graduation shortcomings. So hats off to what they've been able to do as a 7 seed. And again, the comparison with Kemba Walker and Napier is apt and very accurate. But again, you know, Florida hasn't lost since like December 2nd or 3rd. What's ironic is you guys probably realize that the 2 losses Florida suffered, both those teams are in the Final Four. Of course, Wisconsin beat the Gators, and UConn beat the Gators earlier this year. I think UConn was the last team to beat them, as a matter of fact. So that's kind of an interesting side note. But Gators, I tell you what, if Donovan finishes it off and cuts down the nets Monday night, I mean, this guy's got to be considered, you know, one of the best in the game as far as coaching goes, for that 3 national titles for a guy who's not even 50 years old yet.
Oh, I would agree with you. I think he is absolutely one of the elite coaches. His approach is not only tremendous from a basketball standpoint, he's able to keep his kids there, you know, for more than 1 year. And I love what Rick Pitino said about him the other day. He really has the balance in his life where most coaches, we go to the extreme. We can't think of anything else. 11 months out of the year, probably 11 and a half. Coach Pitino talked about how Billy Donovan really has balanced. His family always takes precedent, his faith, and then his profession. And he kind of makes those teams, those players, a part of his family, which gives him even more balance. So it's kind of refreshing. But, you know, you bring up mm-hmm. a great point that a lot of people are talking about. And for our listeners, the 2 losses are to Wisconsin and UConn. And I'm listening to Coach Holley talk this morning, and he's almost saying what you said. The bubble may burst here soon. He was almost like, we've had this great run. If we can't move forward, we've got to understand how wonderful this is and what we've accomplished. And it wasn't a mea culpa, and it wasn't we're done, but it was almost like we know who we're up against and we know where we're at. And this may be our last step forward.
Yeah, there's going to be some great defense. I mean, the winner may be lucky to get to 60 in that Florida-UConn game. And as you guys know, a team in December is a lot different than a team in early April. These teams continue to evolve, and they both obviously have gotten better, but boy, the Gators have taken it to another level. So it looks like it could come down to an all-SEC final, Florida-Kentucky, and you know what? Florida's beaten this Kentucky team 3 times this year. Each time, though, Kentucky's come closer and closer to where they met in the SEC championship game, and they lost by a point. I mean, does Florida really have it in them to beat this Kentucky team a 4th time in a row? If it gets to that, it's awfully difficult to beat somebody 4 times in the same year. And you know Florida's – I mean, you know Kentucky's not going to be intimidated by Florida. So, again – it could be a crazy deal where a number 8 seed wins this whole thing.
And I wonder, I think that Florida, you know, it is tough to beat a team three times, much less four, but Florida probably has the maturity factor in order to do that. Last thing, or two last things quickly, this Northwestern deal, I listened to some stuff this morning on it, read a little bit more about it. We're hearing that the players that brought this to the Labor Relations Board are now hearing from alumni saying what you guys are doing is wrong. Where does this really go, Tom? Is this just something that wakes up the eyes of the NCAA and the university, or does this thing really have legs?
Well, I'm not sure if the union is going to get approved. I don't remember the exact date, but later this month, the players are actually going to vote on if they want to form a union. Some people think they're not going to vote to form a union, the Northwestern players. So that could put an end to it at this point. But I think that, you know, we've gone down the road this far. It may not lead to a union immediately. It may never lead to college players unionizing. But I just think this is the next step, the next agent for big change in college sports. It could lead to some type of compensation for players. And who knows what the ramifications are for that. Who knows how it would be organized, how it would be run. Who knows what the NCAA's future is as an organization. So, again, this is just a – I don't want to call it a watershed moment, but it's certainly a big moment in time that's going to be looked upon as, in hindsight, as being a key factor in how college athletics changed. And again, some ways I'm sort of for the players in this. Just when I find out stuff like Ohio State athletic director Gene Smith gets an $18,000 bonus when one of his wrestlers wins a national title. For some reason, that just really rubs me the wrong way. It's just not right. But anyway, there's billions of dollars in these sports, and I understand scholarships have a lot of value, but when you look at some of the value that these athletes bring to universities, it's pretty impressive. So, again, it's just a watershed moment in sports that it's going to be interesting to see what the next step is with all this, honestly.
Well, I would think that the NCAA, if I was the NCAA, I wouldn't grimace my face and fold my hands. I'd be proactive in this and try to get in front of it. This is a billion-dollar nonprofit organization, and as quick, it took a long time to get to this point, but it can be dismantled pretty quickly.
Yep.
And I would hope that they see that. Now, before we let you go, we're not going to get to the IU-Purdue stuff, but I know that we will at some point because we both have feelings about that.
We're going to need 3 hours for that.
We're looking at least from your standpoint, you feel like this is going to be an all-SEC final game then on Monday.
Yeah, I do. And just real quick, if for some reason it's UConn versus Wisconsin, I spoke to Kaminsky's high school coach earlier this week. He said that when they were in high school, Kaminsky's team was unbeaten playing in the state playoffs, and they got beat by Ryan Boatwright's team from, like, East Aurora, Illinois for the championship. So it's kind of ironic. Maybe those two guys could face off again in a championship environment where, again, Boatwright's team knocked off Kaminsky's team, you know, a few years or so ago. But, again, I think we're probably going to see an all-SEC final here between the Wildcats in Florida, and honestly, I think that's what TV people probably want, and that probably will be our best matchup.
Well, that would be interesting if Wisconsin and UConn could make it to that final game. This is basketball. It's college basketball. It's March Madness.
Yeah.
They don't call it March – well, we're in April, but it's March Madness. They don't call it that for nothing. Tom, thanks for taking the time with us. I'm going to look for four things in that Wisconsin-Kentucky game. The fourth thing you brought up, which is the pace of the game, which I think is absolutely a key anyway, the rebounding on both ends of the court, the Badgers have to get there. They got to shoot the ball well. They just have to, and they have to spread that defense out. Those are the things I think Wisconsin has to do if they're going to have a chance. Thanks for being with us, Tom. Have a great weekend and enjoy the Final Four.
You got it. Take care, Joe and Coach K. Be good.
All right, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we got our man on the scene in Dallas at the site of the Final Four. He's also our MLB Cincinnati Reds contributor, Jeff Cochran. He probably had a late night. I'm kind of amazed that he's up already. I hope he's in good humor. Joe found out for us, but we're going to go to break. When we come back, Jeff Cochran on site at the Final Four. He's there because I couldn't go because Joe didn't have it in the budget. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Have you ever heard a car ad that looks too good to be true or has fast-talking fine print?
Buy before midnight tonight. Maybe okay, maybe not. You probably aren't eligible for this event. Ubelar's prices are better, but you can't know that.
You want to hear Ubelar's fine print? That's right, silence. Our prices will save you money, huge inventory, even bigger discounts. Ubelar & Sons Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. This is the coach, Ken Schulteis. And, folks, we will start our second hour of the Coach K and Joe Show Friday edition, Final Four weekend. I'm not in Dallas. I'm not in Dallas because Joe didn't have it in the budget. He said I used it with the free passes. And let me say that, F-R-E-E, free passes at the Indiana Boys State Finals last weekend. Having said that, next year I may try to do, if we're still on the air, you never know, I may try to do a little thing, get Coach K to the Final Four with Jeff Cochran. And our next guest is Jeff Cochran, on site at like his 28th or 29th Final Four, our MLB contributor for the Reds as well. Jeff, are you still awake from last night, or are you getting up? I mean, what? You are in Dallas. You are at the Final Four. I'm sure you've been having a good time.
I'm certainly not as young as I used to be, Coach, but I did have a good night last night, and I'm looking forward to a great weekend of a really unique blend of a lot of basketball powers, fans from all over the place that are in our group. It's actually my 23rd straight Final Four, but I hope to get to 28 or 29 at some point.
I still think 23 is amazing. You had the Sixers going for 26 consecutive losses in the NBA. You had the Spurs going for 20 wins last night, didn't get it. But you are at your 23rd Final Four. Jeff, you know, you say you're not as young as you used to be. For our listeners, what else has changed about the Final Four from where you were at your first four or five, not you specifically and what you used to do and what you don't do now, but how has the Final Four venue changed in all this time?
You know, I really think the money is the biggest part of that. I think when you look at a couple of Final Fours I went to early on in 1994 and was in the Charlotte Arena, and in 1996 was in the Meadowlands, both two small arenas that, you know, only had a capacity of 18,000, 19,000. Now we're at a place this weekend that if they wanted to, could seat 110,000 seats. I think they have the capacity set up for 85,000 seats. That's still, excuse me, that's still more than anybody, any basketball game has ever had. So we will have record crowds this weekend. Maybe from many of those seats, the game will appear to be a rumor, but I just think the overall financial aspect of the Final Four, every little thing has a sponsor on it. The magnitude of, you know, you have multiple networks covering this. I would imagine that the media credentials are at a record high, and the financial aspect of a Final Four continues to just skyrocket.
Yeah, and in which, you know, we won't get into it this time, but that just bodes back to the Northwestern players trying to unionize, and I think the bigger picture is not that they want a union, the bigger picture is that they want to participate more in all that the NCAA gets. But that's for a discussion for another time.
Right.
Jeff, when you look at the Final Four, and we've got Wisconsin, who's hungry to finally get their name on that trophy. You got UConn, the upstart team that nobody saw, but yet Shabazz Napier does his best Kimball Walker impersonation and just carries this team in. You've got Florida, which a lot of people were high on. I was suspect on them until I saw them play down the stretch. Just a very good team on both ends of the court. You've got a Kentucky team. The talent was always there. The coaching was always there. The question was, could this team find its maturity level and gel in time? People ask me, what's the difference between this Kentucky team and last year's that had a lot of talent? The question is simple for me to answer. They had floor leadership this year. The Harrison twins, the other players, they took active leadership on the floor than last year. And they're very talented as well. Size up this group for us. I mean, you're there. The fans are coming in. It's got to be pretty exciting. Have you run into any of the teams? Have you been able to see anything with those four teams at this point?
Actually, strangely enough, there's a hotel across the street called the Hilton Anatole. It is a gigantic 1,000-room monstrosity of a hotel. I have not been over there yet, but my understanding is that it is the hotel for both Wisconsin and Florida. It's kind of unique that two of the teams are in the same hotel, and obviously you could have some interesting conversations in the lobby and at the bar if both those teams are in it on Monday night. When I look at this team and when I really look at any Final Four, the things that stand out are who is the team with the best player on the floor, and who is the team that has senior leadership and senior guards specifically. Under that formula, UConn's got a pretty good shot this weekend, but I really don't know with, Florida has so much senior depth. They are an experienced basketball club, and interestingly, they already had a loss. Their last loss was to UConn, so it's tough to beat a team once a year, let alone twice or multiple times a year. The other factor is, you look at Wisconsin, complete contrasting styles to Kentucky, but yet Wisconsin is still a team that can put a lot of points on the board. And as we saw in the regional games, Frank Kaminsky is a load and really could create some matchup problems for Kentucky. I think from my standpoint as an IU guy and as a Big Ten person, I'm really rooting for Wisconsin. I want to hope that Wisconsin can win, but I also know that the talent level of Kentucky is amazing, and if they put it all together on the right night, they can beat anybody, including probably those Philadelphia 76ers you were talking about. So I really, when you try to handicap a matchup for this, I see scenarios in which all four of these teams can win it. I'm going to be personally rooting for Wisconsin. If Kentucky wins on Saturday, I'm going to be personally rooting for whoever is playing Kentucky on Monday night. But I really think it's an exciting matchup of four great teams that are all four playing very, very well. I think Connecticut may have the best player on the floor scenario in this Final Four. But a lot could be said for Julius Randle. A lot could be said for Frank Kaminsky. And so you have really a scenario where at this point for me, it's flip a coin who ends up cutting down the nets on Monday night.
Just real quickly to add on to what you're talking about, I think the thing that makes Wisconsin interesting in the tournament right now for me, I know Bo Ryan's a heck of a coach, and I know that when I watch him play, his teams play, I get excited because that's the way I like to coach. And I like to see the game played the way it was meant to be played, do things right, and you look great doing it. But you brought up a point that I think a lot of people maybe are missing on this Wisconsin team. We know they've got size. We know they've got some athletes. We know that they can defend. We know they've got the fundamentals, but this team can score. And I think that makes them an interesting matchup for Kentucky. Whether they can keep Kentucky off the board, and I was just talking with Tom Dienert of the Big10Network.com, senior writer for them, and we were talking about on the show some major points. I think that Wisconsin has got to compete with Kentucky on the boards on both ends. They cannot let Kentucky, one, get multiple offensive rebounds because they're going to be in big trouble if they do, but two, they've got to pound with them on the other end, too. They can't just let them go up and just clean the defensive board and get it out in transition because I don't think they want to play that type of a game. But my biggest point in this barrage that I'm spewing right now, Jeff, is this Wisconsin team can score. And maybe most people who think of the Wisconsin teams in the past have thought of them as ball control, fundamental, hardworking, defend you, rebound. This team can score.
Absolutely. And you know, they're everything the Wisconsin teams of the past have been. They can defend as well. And that's what makes this team interesting. It's really a unique team for Bo Ryan because he's at a point where his team is averaging in the 70s as opposed to in the 40s or 50s. So I think it does create some interesting matchup problems for Kentucky. And again, you're gonna have, you know, multiple freshmen on the floor at the same time, and they're going to be in a building that is a massive compound of screaming people. It's going to be interesting to see how the young kids react on Saturday to that really iconic scene of all the flashes in the stadium as the ball's thrown up. It's going to be interesting to see how Kentucky reacts to that. I know they're used to playing big games, but none of them have ever played in a game this big as far as in front of as many people as well, too.
Well, I the only thing I'll add on to that, and it's kind of it does go along with your point, I was just going to mention, does the moment become bigger than they are? And the same thing can be said for Wisconsin. They don't have a tremendous track record of Final Four appearances. They don't play in the same type of atmosphere. The Big Ten's a great league, but they don't, you know, Kentucky always plays in that Hollywood superstar type atmosphere. People either love them or they hate them. Wisconsin can come into town and they're the opponent. They don't have that same level that they have to deal with. So I think you make a great point, and I would sum it up like this. Which team goes in and the moment is bigger than they are? Because when the moment gets bigger than you are, that's where you have a loss of focus, concentration, you make mistakes, you get rattled. Which team, which coach is able to get his team in there and realize we're as big as the moment? We make the moment big. And I do think that that's going to be an interesting contrast for both these teams in this game. I still have to give Kentucky the edge. I want Wisconsin to win, but I got to give Kentucky the edge, and I got to give Florida the edge over UConn. You know, Jeff, you're there, and a lot of our listeners never get to the Final Four. I've been to a couple, one in Tampa, one in Atlanta, up to Indianapolis as well. Let me ask you this. It's such an event, and you talked about all the marketing and the big companies, but really, if you went to the Final Four nowadays, and you didn't have a ticket, and you didn't want to have a ticket, or you had a ticket and you wanted to sell it, legal or illegal, but you sell it. It really is such a big event that you can just have a great time and really be a part of the Final Four without actually going into the game.
No question. And the crowds will be out in the restaurants and bars all weekend. The TV screens will be on CBS, or actually I think it's TBS on Saturday and CBS for the final. The TV screens are all be on, and everybody's going to be watching the game throughout the city of Dallas and throughout the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I think you're going to see a great atmosphere wherever you are. You know, having done that many times, I've always gone Monday night. Usually if I get tickets for Saturday, I'm ecstatic. There have been a couple Final Fours where I didn't get in on Saturday but made it on Monday. But it's a great atmosphere. It's a great event regardless. This is a chance for all of us as a group to see a city that we haven't been in. So it gives us a chance to see something new. And, it, you know, we always measure Final Four cities up against any other. And really, I think if it were all up to us, it would be New Orleans, San Antonio, and Indianapolis would be the only three cities to get to Final Four. Dallas Dallas is really spread out. Houston was really spread out. You know, when the town's a little smaller, you know it's more of a Final Four atmosphere. And everything's a little more compact and makes it easy for all of us to get around. So it's fun to be with all these friends that I see once a year. And it's also the National Association of Basketball Coaches Convention, and I have some friends in that business as well. So I hope to connect with them this weekend. But it's, like you said, this is an event that even if you don't have tickets to the game, it is a great thing to be at.
Yeah, it's a who's who of college basketball. Everybody that is something in college basketball attends the weekend. If not the championship game, they're there for the weekend. If you like to people watch, every coach is there. Players from that have been stars in the past come in. When you're in a city like Dallas, I agree totally. It's a little more spread out, but you have a lot of superstars from other sports there as well that probably come in and join in the festivities. The practices are opening. Will you go to any, Jeff? Will you be at all the team practices? What's your itinerary on that?
Well, since I do have tickets to all three games, I won't go to the practices. I'll be in attendance on Saturday, but we'll probably head downtown to where the coaches are and maybe connect with some friends down there. But I will be at the games both Saturday and Monday. So the stadium is about 25 minutes away from where we are, and none of us have cars, so we're probably only going to go to the stadium on game days.
Well, you're just going to have to sweet talk some Southern Texas gals. You're married, of course, but for a ride only, just a ride to one of the places. Jeff. Last thing on the Final Four before we go to baseball. This in the end, it comes down to four teams, and they're playing for a chance to be the best in college basketball. When the fans come in and all the hoopla goes on, the games start. I really want your thought. You look at Kentucky, you look at Wisconsin, Florida, UConn. Who do you see coming out of this thing? Who can weather the storm for two games and win this?
Well, again, Coach, I really, my heart wants to have Wisconsin win on Saturday, but I just don't see that happening. I do think Kentucky advances. And Florida, UConn, you have great senior guards on UConn squad, but you have a senior-laden team with Florida. And I think the experience of Florida overcomes UConn, and the fact that they played them earlier, they know who each other are, and I think that gives Florida an edge, and that sets up an interesting matchup on Monday night. And again, following that thought pattern, Florida has beaten Kentucky three times, and it's almost impossible to beat a team a fourth time. At that point, I'll be I think I even brought an orange shirt just in case it's Florida Kentucky on Monday. I think in that case I'd almost have to favor Kentucky on Monday night, because it looks, four times to play a team, very seldom does a team sweep a series. We know that in baseball. And we certainly would expect that in college basketball. So I guess that being said, I would expect Kentucky to cut down the nets on Monday night. And I will be out of the stadium if that happens before the nets are cut down and the trophy is presented.
That's about how I feel. I'm sure I'll be turning the TV off a little early. I'm sorry, Kentucky fans who listen to the show. I can't share the joy that you share in the program. I think Coach Cal does a great job. I just don't like the pro basketball level. Plus, you guys are just a little crazy over your Kentucky Wildcats. Whether they cheat or whether they do it the right way, it's always okay with with Kentucky fans.
And yeah, Coach, I'll add, you know, over the years I've met a lot of great people at Final Fours. And I can say without any reservation that one gentleman I met at a Final Four still stands out 19 years later. What a complete jerk he was. And that one person was John Calipari. So I have the additional, you know, the traditional Indiana dislike for Kentucky. And then when you mix in my personal dislike for John Calipari, it definitely makes things interesting for us this weekend.
Great stuff. Great stuff on the Final Four. Real quickly before we let you go, let's switch over to Major League Baseball. So much going on in the sports world, but when baseball starts its season, everybody knows it. Opening day was this week. The Reds have battled the rain, a lack of run production until, I guess, yesterday, but have struggled a little bit to get people on the base paths. I think they lost 2 of 3 to the Cardinals, if I'm correct. And I know, yeah, and Billy Hamilton, of course, a new story, a big story for the Reds. Quickly, Jeff, your thoughts on the first series against the Cardinals and the Reds and your thoughts on the Reds overall.
Well, I think when you look at the Cardinals, obviously the Cardinals are the favorite to win that division. And they put together a great pitching performance from Adam Wainwright and the bullpen on Monday to win opening day. Tony Cingrani of the Reds came back and won 1-0, another 1-0 game on Wednesday. And then yesterday they had suffered the 4-hour rain delay and played a long game where Homer Bailey really didn't have his best stuff and got hit around pretty hard. You know, the Cardinals are the team to beat, and there's no question about that. I think encouraging for the Reds were the performances of Johnny Cueto and Tony Cingrani. But as you mentioned, with Billy Hamilton, he is getting a steady diet of curveballs and balls out of the zone. He developed a reputation in spring training for being a patient hitter, but they're really going to throw the breaking ball at him. He has not shown an ability to hit it. He is 0 for 10 at this point. He did draw his first walk yesterday, but was unable to steal. Brandon Phillips struck out and continued to foul balls off while Billy Hamilton was attempting to steal. So he has been a complete non-factor. Now, you look at a box score and you look at the batting averages of any team at this point, and you're going to see some zeros and you're going to see some 700 batting averages. Obviously, those things are going to even out over time, and there's not a question yet whether Brian Price, manager of the Reds, is worried about Billy Hamilton. He's come out already and said, hey, he's my center fielder. He's going to start every day. And I think you're going to continue to see that at least for a month to get him acclimated to seeing the kind of pitching he's going to see and hopefully start to tune it up.
You know, when I think of Billy Hamilton, I would just caution Reds fans or anyone else in baseball, don't down on the guy too quick. I remember a player, he's a Hall of Famer today, that played for the Cubs years back, Ryan Sandberg, and I can remember him starting out like 0 for 21 or something like that, and I can remember Harry Carey saying, send this guy back to the minors. Well, of course, Ryan Sandberg went on to have a spectacular rookie season and went on to have a Hall of Fame career. So you don't give up too soon. You know, he's seeing pitches now and approaches now that are not spring training-like. And so he's adjusting to the regular season. And you know, Jeff, you know as well as I do, those veterans are saying, let's see what this – all the hype, let's see what this guy's really got. He can't steal if he can't get on base. And he's gonna learn to be a professional hitter. He's just going to struggle along the way.
No question. It's trial under fire, and obviously the Reds aren't in a position to move him down in the batting order at this point, and they really don't have another leadoff hitter on that roster. So he's kind of in a position where he's got to come in and start, play a great defensive center field, which he'll do, and he's got to find a way to get on base, and that's going to be a learning process, and I'm sure Brian Price is going to allow him some time, and I'm sure Reds fans are going to allow him some time as well, although they won't be as patient as manager Brian Price will be.
Do you have any concerns for our Reds listeners out there? You have any concerns about this team offensively?
Absolutely. I think you know, you're seeing through the first three games, although they hit the ball well yesterday. But after a four-hour rain delay, you know, whatever happens to pitching in after a four-hour rain delay, pitchers that are used to getting in a routine and settling down and throwing strikes right out of the gate are sitting around in the clubhouse waiting for a game to start. And that affects all pitching performances, I believe. I think when you look at Votto and Bruce, it'd be awful nice to have a right-handed hitter. You know, Ryan Ludwig is 36 years old. He's coming off shoulder surgery, and that is never a good equation for your left fielder, you know, power hitter in the fourth or fifth spot in the lineup. So it'd be great if they had a power bat, a right-handed power bat, and they just don't have that on this roster. And it's going to be an interesting situation to see where they develop runs. And that's why Billy Hamilton's got to get on base, and Brandon Phillips has got to get on base before Joey Votto and Jay Bruce come to the plate.
Well, Jeff, you have a great time down there in Dallas, but can you go up, you meet some of these coaches, see some of these guys, even if you don't like them, go up and get that iPhone out and put it on record and get us some Coach K and Joe Show promotions. You're listening to Coach K and Joe Show. We listen to the Coach K and Joe Show. And remember to say, and Coach K speaks the truth.
Okay, I will see what I can do.
Get us some promos down there. We'd love it. We got to have some promos, and then I'll tell Joe to make sure to add into the budget a stipend for all your extra duties down in Dallas. Of course, that won't be much.
That's okay. Any little stipend will help. We have to pay the bar bill somehow, Coach.
Oh, here's Joe flushing the toilet on us. I guess that's something to do with the movement. Jeff, great stuff. Hey, have a great time down at the Final Four and be safe. And I hope Kentucky doesn't win. I hope they don't win. I hope Wisconsin does win. But I do think you're right. I think we're going to see Florida and Kentucky in the finals, and Kentucky's probably going to have the edge.
I hope we're both wrong, but I'm going to enjoy the weekend. I hope you guys enjoy it from home as well.
I'll toast one to you, and you toast one to me while you're down there. Thanks for being with us, Jeff.
That will happen before 5 o'clock today.
Maybe in 5 minutes. And what is it, 10:30? About 10:30 in Dallas, something like that right now.
we may have an early start. Who knows?
Well, I know if Pup and Jay were with you, it would really be an early start. Have a great time, Jeff.
Thanks, Coach. We'll see you guys soon.
All right, that's great stuff. Jeff Cochran, on site in Dallas for the Final Four. Good stuff. He's been to 20. Folks, listen to this. Jeff Cochran has been to 23 straight Final Fours. 23 straight Final Fours. I mean, he's like a Michigan State. He's like Michigan State was there for a while, always going to the Final Four. Tremendous to keep that up and meet his buddies. If you've never been to a Final Four, it's a great time. Joe, have you ever been to a Final Four?
No, I've not.
Never been. Not to one.
Nope. Not been.
Well,
nope.
I've been to three. My brother Don, our indie contributor, Don Schulteis, I think he's been to six or seven. It really is a lot of fun, folks. And Joe, you don't even have to go to the games. I think that I went to the IU game in Atlanta, but the other Final Fours, I really didn't even go to the games. They put up big screen TVs everywhere. You can just watch the game and socialize and have a good time and lift a cold one. It could be iced tea, Coca-Cola, or another drink of choice, but it's a lot of fun. Jeff's just going to have a ball in Dallas, and, you know, the Kentucky fans are going to be over the top. You know that. They travel well. The Wisconsin fans are going to be so happy to get out of the cold and snow. They probably got the brats going already down there. The brats and the beer are probably going to be flowing with all those Wisconsin fans, Joe.
Oh yeah, it should be a good time. Actually, I'm going to actually get to go be in Lexington this weekend, and we plan on going out Saturday night and watching the game somewhere, and that should be quite interesting because you know they're the Kentucky fans. I don't know if there's any like any other. They're just crazy.
Yeah, they're pretty rabid. So it's going to be a fun Final Four, and of course we talked a little bit about the Reds. And the start of Major League Baseball. Joe, let's go to break, and when we come back, we'll have the mailbag, and we'll talk a little bit about Kelvin Sampson at IU and clean up a few other things from the headlines of sports. It's been a great show so far. We want to thank Tom Dienert for coming on and giving the Big Ten Network .com's perspective on the Final Four and the Northwestern situation, and also Jeff Cochran, our contributor, right on site in Dallas for the Final Four. Hey, hurry back, folks, but we got to go to the people that make things happen for the Coach K and Joe Show and always support our sponsors, especially on this Final Four weekend. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family, cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Chevy Cadillac, Toyota Scion in Jasper. We've all heard the commercial, 15 minutes could save you 15. Folks, let me tell you, it won't take 15 minutes for us to save you money. Give Ubelars a call at 1-800-937-USA1 or visit us online at ubelar.com. We'll tell you the facts, treat you right, no bait and switch, and best of all, we will save you money. Ubelar Chevy Cadillac, Toyota Scion in Jasper, where customers send their friends for a lifetime of savings in 15 minutes or less since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
It's not the U.S. Postal mailbag. It's not the Joe mailbag. It's the Coach K mailbag.
New York and New Jersey love Coach K. Go Hoosiers! Coach K speaks the truth! Woo!
Now here's Coach K and Joe with this week's Coach K's Mailbag.
And we're back for the Coach K's Mailbag. Coach, there are a lot of them, so let's just go ahead and get started. First one comes from Chris in Newburg. After all these years, is class basketball system working? Would you change it?
Well, Chris, it's a great question. It depends on who you ask. When I was up at the Indiana State Boys Class Tournament, I was talking with a couple of people that are connected with the IHSAA. They are members of the executive board. I'm not going to go in to who they were because I respect the fact that they were willing to talk to me about some of this stuff. There is a major financial drop-off in the IHSA state tournament. The numbers are not what they used to be. And people can say, well, there's more on TV. They can, you know, people have changed. There's more sports. You can say what you want. I think it could be a combination of those things. I think you have to attribute some of it to the fact that class basketball changed the funneling of people to the high school basketball game into the state tournament, and it took away some of the pomp, the excitement, the enthusiasm of having one champion. You know, I even noticed it at the state finals. I have not been to many state finals since they switched from the one class to the class basketball. A lot of people haven't. It used to be a pilgrimage to go to the state finals. Your team was out of it. You went to the state finals as a fan, as a coach, as a player. You went to the state finals. And that's why for a few years they could hold it in the old Hoosier Dome and draw 40,000 people. But I asked this question, Chris. I said, if these four, if you take the attendance from all four games, the actual attendance, the real attendance, will you fill Bankers Life as if, you know, four teams and a championship? And his comment and the comment of the other gentleman I talked to said, there have been a couple of years when we would have done that, but most years, no. We would not fill Bankers Life if you combine them all. You know, the numbers they print in the paper, I don't know what to tell you about all that, but when you think about filling every seat, the answer was no, we wouldn't do that. And so they are looking, and I'm going to bring a member of the executive committee on to talk a little bit about it. He's not going to give his opinion whether he's for it or against it, but he will explain a little bit. They are looking at changing class basketball from four classes to three classes. And I don't know that it's going to make a tremendous amount of difference overall. It may help with the tournament as far as taking sectional and regional and semi-state level teams and putting them more in their area where it draws more interest. I think one of the big problems, Chris, is that there will be situations where teams will come play in a regional or no, even a sectional. They have no geographical connection to the sectional they're playing in. Joe, you can probably join me in on this. If you looked at the Southridge 3A sectional this year, you had Vincent's Lincoln, which has a connection, Southridge, Jasper, Pike Central, some connection, but then you had Mitchell, who literally has no connection to the Southridge tournament area geographically. And then when you get to the regionals, it gets worse. And when you get to the semi-state, it gets even worse than that. You had Greensburg coming all the way over to Washington, I believe. Lanesville for the regional coming all the way, I think it was the regional, yeah, coming all the way to Lagodi. I mean, those are long distances for these teams to travel, and their fans just aren't going to travel as well as they would. Plus, here's the other thing that people don't keep in mind, Chris. Plus, there's a lot of fans from the schools that played them in the sectional or played those teams in the regional that won that will never follow the team after that. They're never going to follow the team that won after that. In the one-class system, because of the geographical setup of the tournament and the way it funneled everybody into one champion, some of those communities got on board with the winner of their sectional. And whether they liked him or not, they followed them anyway because it was a tradition to do that. In the regional, it got even more. Every team from the sectional usually sent their teams over to the regional. It did happen that way. Fans who were from Dubois or Forest Park would go to that regional. The regional winners, they would follow into the semi-state. It really did work that way. It made for a more complete tournament. The fan enthusiasm and participation was much greater, and it became a tradition that you passed down to your sons and your daughters, so forth and so on. Now, my only concern is we've lost a generation of kids, Joe and Chris. We've lost a generation of kids, and they've become adults, and unless their kids are involved, they're really not following their teams outside of their local area anymore. And if I had one comment to make to the IHSAA, you need to geographically set up your tournaments to where they are as close, the communities and schools are as close as possible, because that's where you build your fan base and your following, not just for the teams participating, but when one of the team wins, they're connected with that team and they follow them into the next level. So I don't think that class basketball has been bad for the small schools as far as being able to say we want a sectional, a regional, a semi-state, or a state, but it has not been good for building the history and tradition of Indiana high school basketball, its fan base, its champions. I mean, you look at you look at the state final book, and it's got all these different statistics from the class basketball versus the single class. And really, the event of the state finals is not as good as it used to be in the single class. They have to worry about, this team's done, we've got to get the next game, we've got to get the next champion on, we've got to get the next champion on. It takes away from saluting the one champion for the whole state of Indiana. So financially it has not worked. Fan base-wise it has not worked. The only place it has worked is some smaller communities, principals and superintendents, have gotten less grief because their team has gotten further in the tournament or won a state championship.
Okay, next question comes from Mike in Evansville. Which tri-state team, football, basketball, baseball, softball, volleyball, all high school sports considered, has been the most dominant since the year 2000?
There's been a lot of teams in the area. Castle has done well in the public school arena, the bigger schools. Memorial has done well in the private schools. Modern Day has done well. You know, when you throw class bat, when you throw class sports in, folks, Mike, when you throw class sports in, it kind of muddies the water a little bit. Things get a little bit watered down, so to speak, because they're playing in class sectionals and regionals and semi-states and states, so you've got multiple class winners, and so when you look at different schools, you have to look at it from that scenario. So a school like Bar Eve has done extremely well. They won a volleyball state championship. They've been to the finals in basketball and boys. Teams like Castle, I just mentioned Memorial and Modern Day have done well. Jasper has had solid success. There's been a bunch of them out there. Maybe, Mike, you know the answer to that. Maybe, Joe, you have the answer to that. But with class sports, it's hard to say this school has been the best or this school has been the best. There's been multiple schools that have done well. Are they the best? I don't know. Is their program the best? Just because you're a big school and you've done well doesn't mean you're better than the smaller school that has done well. So it's hard to say. Joe, you got any thoughts on that?
I'm a Jasper homer, so you probably don't want my answer. So
You can say Jasper, but the answer is who has won successfully multiple tournaments in multiple sports. Jasper, of course, is definitely in there. Southridge has done well. Forest Park has done extremely well. You know, there's a lot. Tecumseh had a run where it did really well. There's been a lot of schools that we could talk about. So if you're saying specifics, I can't be specific. I think class sports has allowed multiple schools to say our sports program has been outstanding. I mean, Modern Day went for a three-peat in the girls' basketball. They've won a state championship. John Gable was the coach. He's now at Jasper. They've won a volleyball state championship, I believe. They've done well in soccer, baseball. They've been to the state finals in baseball. I'm just picking them out because I'm more familiar with some of those teams. Teams like Evansville North have not. Evansville Central has not. Boonville has not. Heritage Hills has had some solid seasons in different sports. So it's an interesting question. I think that the answer is there's been a number of teams in the southern part of the state who have represented their school and the community very well in the class sports era.
Okay, next question comes from us, from our residence questioner, John Botsmagic-Bodorf. And I might, before I ask this question, after I got this question during the show, I actually added a slide, the pictures of the slide passed on our CoachKandJoeShow.com website. So people, you might want to pull it up so you know what reference. His question is, Paulina Gretzky is on the cover of Golf Digest
Soft Digest, bikini clad. This has LPGA players baffled. Should they embrace something that brings more attention to their tour, or is this a bad message for the game?
Let me ask for clarification on something. He says it has all PGA Tour players or the female PGA Tours?
LPGA.
And the question is this right or wrong? Or
is it good that it's bringing more attention, or is it sending a bad message?
I don't think it sends a bad message. And here's why. Golf Digest, Golf Magazine or Golf Digest, it's not there as a nonprofit book or magazine for golf. It's there as a profit to sell golf in a positive way, but also to build its readership so it can survive. And the more people that read the magazine or get the magazine or look at the magazine, the more have a chance to find some connection to golf. Now, you may say, okay, if they get that magazine, then they're only getting it so they can look at Paulina Gretzky, who's getting married to, I believe, one of the professional golfers, and that's why I think she was one of the choices for the cover. It's not, you know who's going to read the magazine that's golfers. It's trying to draw more people to the sport. You can say this is not the way to do it. Well, why do people have giveaways of things that have nothing connected to who they are? Because they're trying to draw people in so that they can learn a little bit about or get connected to that particular situation. So I don't think it's a bad thing. Should they put some LPGA golfers on the cover? I don't know. I don't know if they should or not. I think they have the right to make that decision, and you have a choice to either buy the magazine or not buy the magazine. I've had the magazine before. It's got a lot of stuff on golf. It's great. So if you're a golfer, you look to that magazine. But if you're a non-golfer or really have no connection to the sport, what might draw you to take a look at that magazine? Well, a nice-looking person on the cover, I guess. something interesting on the cover. And so, hey, I don't have a problem with it, Joe. What do you think?
I think if she wants to be on there, who cares? People worry about too many things these days. Worry way too much. Next question, and you should be familiar with this question. One of my favorite JHS basketball and baseball players as I was growing up was John Schulteis. What is he up to these days, Tom and Jasper?
Well, Tom John is living in the northern part of Indianapolis, his wife Maria and their kids. He is a teacher and has coached a little bit up there. He teaches in one of the great schools, has coached on and off some baseball and different things. He's in great shape. We still play pickup games, and all his nephews, my kids included, are in awe at how well he jumps, how well he shoots the ball, how well we'll even go out on a baseball field and play some pickup baseball. We'll sneak onto one of the fields around wherever we're at and play a home run derby or just play a baseball game. How well he still throws the ball, his curveball. John, we always called John the golden boy growing up. We always called him golden. He's an outstanding athlete. And most people may not realize this, but my brother John was born with what's called a club foot, and people out there have been born with that. So he actually accomplished all he did in athletics with basically a half a foot. He overcame that. Our family took him to the Shriners Hospital on weekends when he was a real young boy. They helped get that as corrected as possible, and John literally became an all-area basketball player at DuBois County, leading scorer, a U of B baseball pitcher, starting pitcher with Andy Bennis and Jimmy Berger, my brother-in-law, and he did all that with what was known as club foot. And I say that to our listeners, if you're in that same situation or you have children, don't ever think that some something like that can't be overcome, my brother certainly didn't have a problem with it, and he did very, very well. So thanks for asking, Mike. All right, Tom.
Okay, next question. We switch to baseball. St. Louis Cardinal first baseman Matt Adams fell into the stands while trying to catch a foul ball hit in the third inning of a baseball game Thursday. The fan gave him the one-finger salute after the play because he said Adams shoved him. Should the fan have been ejected, or was Adam in the wrong? Adams in the wrong? I regret to say I did not see this on video, so I don't know.
I don't think that Adams was in the wrong, and I think the fan acted ridiculously, and this is going to irritate some of our listeners. But I think the fan, if not ejected, should have at least been reprimanded in some way, and I don't know how you do that. But I'm going to tell you something. Those players are out there. They are playing as hard as they possibly can. Every ball, loose ball in basketball, pass in football, every foul ball in baseball is an opportunity to make a play to help your team. Now, conversely, when it gets off the playing field or off the playing floor, the fan has this unalienable right under the fan's constitution to be able to grab the ball or become part of the play. But listen, when you choose to act on your inalienable right as a fan to be part of the play, then you need to be prepared. You need to be prepared for the consequence. And the consequence is that you may have a professional athlete, the greatest athletes on the planet of the earth, running into you, using their body to shield you so they can make a play on the ball. I saw the play. There was nothing intentional on his part. He was reacting to the play he was trying to make. And I think fans need to understand, when you start to engage, when you start to place yourself into the play, you need to be prepared for consequences. And I'll tell you some of the consequences, sad consequences. Remember a couple years ago we had a fan fall and get injured going after a foul ball or a home run ball, fell over the fence. Things happen when you engage yourself into the play. I don't like fans giving someone the finger, shoving back, taking a swipe at a player, calling them names. I don't like that. I think you can be a fan and have fun and be emotional and get on people without resorting to that. But Adams did nothing wrong. If anyone was at fault, it was the fan, Joe. It was the fan.
Okay. I didn't get a chance to see it, but I think that, you know, the players are there to play the game, and if he's going for the ball, he's going for the ball. So Pacers, with six games left, four away and two home by the Pacers, and in the second seed by just percentage points, do you feel like the Pacers has what it takes to get the number one seed?
No, I don't, and I hope they prove me wrong. But the funk that the Pacers are in is magnified because they are not a great offensive team. And I'd have to look at the rest of the schedule, what's left for the Pacers versus the Heat or some of the other teams, but I'm really worried about the Pacers right now. I'm really worried about the Pacers. And I think if you're a Pacer fan, you should be. Now, having said that, teams have a way of correcting themselves and coming out of things. Example, we've got one at the Final Four, two of them at the Final Four. We've got Kentucky and we've got Wisconsin. Both teams hit a little bit of a slide. They fell out of favor with the voters. They fell out of favor with the prognosticators. They're in the Final Four. So you can turn it around, but I think the big problem for the Pacers is they really struggle offensively on the pro level. And if they're not playing well defensively, if they're not moving the ball offensively, it magnifies itself. So I don't think they can get the one seed anymore. I think they've lost that. I think right now they've got to focus on getting the best seed they can. I did mention earlier in the show, that some of the prognosticators are saying, well, maybe the Pacers don't want the one seed. Maybe a lower seed allows their move into the conference finals an easier road. Here's all I've got to say about this, folks. You want your team playing well. Regardless of the road, they have to go. Matchups do matter. I agree with that. Who you get matched up against does matter. It probably matters more in a one-game series than it does a 5 or a 7. So for the Pacers, they need to get themselves as a team back on track, defensively, moving the basketball, playing the game they were playing before Turner came and Granger was let go. They talk about having fun, all this other stuff. Folks, listen, you know what having fun is in sports? Being successful. Joe's played a ton of sports. I've played and coached. Having fun comes down to being successful. When you're winning, when you're playing well, you're having fun. But in order to get to that point, you got to work your butt off. You got to put the pedal to the metal. You've got to sacrifice. You've got to do things you don't like to do. You've got to be willing to allow others to do more than you're doing if that to get more of the spotlight. It's like I say about Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo can stay in the front seat. He's just got to allow some other people to ride in the front seat with him. But, no, I don't think the Pacers can get the one seed back.
Okay, we've got from Jim in Dale, Indiana. Who will have their one shining moment on Monday? Does anyone really have a reasonable chance to beat Florida?
Oh, wow. I think Kentucky has a really good shot at beating Florida. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to throw this out there. If by chance Wisconsin could get through Kentucky, I think that Wisconsin poses an interesting matchup with Florida again. Remember, they beat Florida earlier in the year. Style of Florida and the style of Wisconsin. I believe that game was at Wisconsin. I think that Wisconsin's style does create some mismatches with Florida. And remember what I just said in one game playoffs, the mismatches or the matchups really matter more than if you're playing a 5 or 7 game series. So I'd like to think that Wisconsin's going to have their shining moment. But I'm going to tell you, I believe Kentucky is going to have its shining moment. I think the talent, they found some maturity on the floor, and I really don't think the big stage is going to faze Kentucky. I know our guest Jeff Cochran thought it might. I don't think it will. I think Kentucky, by nature of its program, by its national spotlight, I don't think those guys – I think those guys start the season as if they're in the NCAA final game, as it is to other teams.
Okay, Coach, we've got about a minute left of the show. I'll give you ask you a quick one here. I got some other. We'll hold the other ones over. I asked all the ones since we had so many that were pertinent to this week. So we've got some questions that I'm going to hold over. But real quick, one last question. What Indiana Division I college team has the best chance to rebound from this year and make the NCAA tournament next year? Harry from Jasper.
Wow. You know what, Joe? You're not going to like my answer. I'm going to say Indiana does. And I know a lot of people are laughing right now, but listen to me. I know that Noah Vonleh is gone, but remember what's coming back. Yogi Ferrell will be a year older. We know he can score. We know he can handle the ball. His ability to multitask as an on-court leader will be much, much better next year. Remember I talked all year that sometimes people have problem multitasking, being a player, scoring, handling the ball, doing those things, and leading, because if they're not playing well, they're bothered by it. I think he's not going to be, he's not going to have that problem as much. And I think the guys that are coming back, sophomores and freshmen, they're going to be 1 year further along. They're going to be better than they were. This team will right the ship. And if they're able to land the fifth-year senior or bring in another guy, I think they've got a good chance of going to the tournament. Sorry, Joe. I don't know if Purdue can. I'd say they're right behind IU, though.
Right now, with not knowing the whole equations with Hammonds and et cetera, there's just no way of being able to predict that, because if he leaves, it is yet again the third year of rebuilding, which is getting a little old, but it's neither here nor there. But, Coach, you have any big plans for the weekend?
Well, I tell you what, Joe, I know that we're getting ready to end the show, at least the live portion. I would ask people to hang with us for next week. I do want to talk about Kelvin Sampson getting back as the head basketball coach and a few other things, but we'll hold that till next week. My plans are to watch basketball. That's my plans.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a plan to me.
Enjoy your Final Four weekend and your trip to Lexington. I'd rather it be you in Lexington than me.
Well, I'm not going for the Kentucky Wildcats. I will preface that. I'm going to go for Reese Milligan. That's why I'm going. So, Coach,
you have a safe trip and have a good weekend. Just take us home, Joe.
Okay. Well, another great show. And for Coach K, I'm Joe saying we'll see you next week on the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Ubelar & Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. See you next week.